Today on The Grave Talks, Rethink Everything, a conversation about death and spirits and ghosts with Aaron G. Thompson. What if everything we thought we knew about ghosts and hauntings was wrong? What if the conscious entities that some have found ways to interact with were not, in fact, who we thought they were? Not demonic, not malevolent, or even intending to confuse, just a form of energy that we had not yet considered. Today, we go down the road of learning about eco-terrestrial quantum mechanics and the science of how why ghosts ghost with Aaron G. Thompson.
I feel like a snowflake with this. I really do, because I didn't have any crazy, scary thing that I wanted answers for. I guess I did. I take that back. I did have a crazy, scary thing, but it was very arbitrary. I was 8 years old, and I had a random fear of death. Okay. So nothing really paranormal, you know, about it for the most part. And I just kind of held on to that. I think that was a seed that was in me. And about my teen, years, about 15, 16, I started asking the question to my peers, to coaches, to ministers, teachers, parents, family, do ghosts exist? And I got half the folks said yes, the other half said no, almost directly down the middle, split wise, but all with the same answer, just because. Just because. And for teenager, I'm like, just because, that's weird, guys. I mean, shouldn't there be something with this? Some science? I mean, if it's out there, we should be able to figure it out. And I guess I decided if I wanted to know something, I got to figure it out myself. So I hit my, I've been at this point in time, 2020 here, I've been doing this for 21 years. I started back in 1999 to aggressively and actively pursue answers. And I just hit the books. I hit the books 2 years before I hit, on site at all. But I did not believe. I kind of thought it was more junk than not, honestly. I'm like, man, adults are crazy. People are crazy, you know, seeing things. It has to be psychology and all this stuff. So I really went unbiased. I went in with a Bible in one hand, a science book in the other hand. I went right down the middle. What way is it going to take me, if any? And I just started hitting sites, reading about tactics. I never had a mentor, so I was kind of interpreting as I went with some of the written stuff. But yeah, I just learned a lot of folklore and educated myself a whole heck of a lot, and educated myself a whole lot more since the first couple of years. But yeah,
and we can definitely get into some of that stuff. So when you're a teenager, you're getting those answers of, well, just because, and this is still in the back of your mind, this fear of death. Was it really initially kind of a quest to calm that fear, to be like, okay, even if I do die, at least I get to be a ghost, or at least I get to go to this magical place or that magical place, or go burn over here, whatever. It's at least an answer. Is it just trying to get to finding what that answer is? Because it's confusing with all the religions or belief systems that are out there.
It totally is. The idea was, how do I want to live my life? I wanted to hit that young enough where I knew if I should be skydiving, rock climbing, mountain climbing, all that stuff, or just stay in my mom's basement, play video games.
Sure.
What's going to be the safer route? Because if we're deleted and it's nothing, maybe I should just enjoy some adventures and some video games, play it safe.
Yeah.
But,
if there's nothing, I'll be a serial killer. Why not? You know?
Yeah. Let's do this, guys. So yeah, I just wanted to see how I needed to position my life ultimately. And I knew when I had the fear of death, actually it was kind of funny hindsight. I thought, crap, I had in my head, this is, mind you, an 8-year-old's mindset at the time. I wanted to be remembered before I died, because that would be the closest thing to mortality, right? At least for me at the time, because we're just going to be deleted.
Yeah.
So how do we become an immortal? Either a movie star, or B, President of the United States of America. Mm-hmm. So I could probably do president, though. You know, I just got to do a couple years of it.
As far as when you were starting to dig into this and you're trying to figure out what is this stuff? What is this ghost stuff all about? Is this more junk than not? What were some of the things that were leading you down that path of kind of feeling, I don't know. I kind of think this stuff is a little more junk than it is actual science.
Oh, man, it's such a... Yeah, it's such a awesome question because I had a lot of moments of discovery, I think I like to call them, where I would be, mind you, 2 years of book smart before hitting my first site. My first site I hit when I was 19 years old. I was obsessive. And when I talk about obsessive, everyone's around, kidding their video games or kidding their passion, right? Mm-hmm. Well, think of a 17, 18 year old teenager that just dove headfirst obsessively into this. That was me. I started learning the Paranormal Encyclopedia. I mean, not learning, memorizing it because I thought that'd be cool. I got to like D's, so I don't
anything like, beyond that, it's like, well, I can do A through D. That's
I have no clue about EVP.
Very knowledgeable on the first four letters, can tell you everything, yeah. But
I can tell you all about D ports and all sorts of I hit my first site, and no matter how much book, reading you do and all that fun stuff, even if I had a mentor, I probably would have questioned this being myself, but I didn't understand what that feeling was when you're on site, when you really are in an active area. Mind you, again, at this point, I'm still skeptical. I'm trying to keep it very unbiased, but yet there's some interesting things happening. Say I'm in, it's winter time. Everyone's cold on the team that I pull out to the cemetery, and I'm the only one comfortably warm standing by a past loved one. A coincidence is kind of a curse word. nowadays I fall back to. So it's interesting, but I data log and I've moved on. But there was a moment where the energy, where you feel this very uncomfortable, unsettling, I want to say static, but it doesn't even feel like static. It's like layers of static-ish stuff, pulling at you and hitting you and making your gut feel weird and your head feels funny. Mm-hmm. Those moments I mistook for fear, and those happened a lot. And I was like, why am I super scared of this moment? Like uncomfortably, aesthetically, visceral scared. I want to get out of the place. And some other locations that look like they're straight out of a terrifying horror movie, I'm perfectly fine walking in. It was confusing, mm-hmm. For me to put that in consideration because I wasn't in the mindset to illustrate that being energy or at least some form of something. But it really took, how everyone's like, oh, I'll believe it when I see it. Well, mm-hmm. It took an extreme moment to witness a full apparition right in front of me manifest. I didn't see it manifest, but I did see it de-manifest, which was fascinating. The neat thing was there were two people on site that witnessed it with me. One was a legitimate skeptic or cynic, mm-hmm. Whatever you want to call it. No, I think she was more skeptical, but she was also a minister. So her system didn't acknowledge this type of visual stimulation. I think they call that when she ended up running out of the cemetery, terrified. Actually, I think they call that I can't think of the word. Like a moment of enlightenment.
That's okay, what I'm looking for. So just to understand this correctly, she was there. Was she able to see what you saw, or you said she ran out of there terrified? But what? So I'm assuming she had some sort of reaction, or did see something, or was it more so I saw this, but I'm not going to acknowledge that I saw this or accept that I just saw this? Or explain that to me.
Oh, she quit her ministry afterwards. She saw something.
Okay.
Yeah, she went a different path in life. It'd be interesting to follow up with her and just have a conversation. But what? I went in this time frame. I had no clue of the site. It was an outside cemetery. No vehicles allowed in this area. So it was a very desolate, very un, populated zone. No lights. There's a pretty bright moon out that night. And one of the individuals was a psychic feeler that went with me. At the time, I didn't really believe in the psychic junk. I'm like, oh, I don't ghost. That's weird enough. And I'm still questioning that stuff. So sure, you can hang with me and come with me, but yeah, whatever. No judgment. Well, I literally saw him filling up apparition's leg, and the apparition to me moved like a flipbook animation, and it was like a Disney stage effect where smoke was blowing up into a glass mold of a fisherman-shaped body. Mm-hmm. I saw details of the beard, the hat, you know, the full thing. I froze. I wasn't badass at all. I froze and threw out my arm to stop the minister lady. She witnessed a similar visual that I did, but hers was more just free-floating fog, thick smoke. Mm-hmm. But it all disappeared at the same time, and me and the psychic audibly said, "He's gone," at the same exact time. That's when she ran out.
Wow. So you're having, obviously, this is a very obvious experience. This isn't a, I'm feeling uncomfortable or I'm feeling odd and I don't know why. I can't really measure it other than just saying this out loud to people or recounting it. Everyone saw this visual manifestation. When you went and you had this experience, were you doing anything to try and bring this out to be seen? Were you speaking? Were you requesting something to show itself? Was there anything used, or did this just kind of, you know, turn a corner and boom, there's, oh, holy shit, there's something here?
Kind of turn the corner type thing. There was nothing. I was actively investigating. Of course, mm-hmm. we went out. I had my 35 millimeter disposable camera in hand. Of mm-hmm. course, I didn't slap a picture because I was stunned on what I was seeing.
Sure.
but that went cool. But yeah, again, experience. No, we didn't do anything special. Didn't expect for anything special. And funny thing is, I was questioning myself so hard the next day, I literally started looking up the phone number to a psych ward. I thought something was super messed up with me. Like, I didn't know why I saw that so detailed.
Sure.
It messed with me. It melted my head. I don't know how to explain more than my thought. I remember my exact thought at the time was, Aaron, this is your fault. Monsters exist. Like, I keep chasing these damn things. Bound to happen if they're out there.
Well, it's understandable. I mean, if you're very, you know, scientific in nature and in thinking, but you're wanting to see, you know, what is there going on here? There must be something to this with the amount of people that have these experiences, and then you have one yourself. There's a lot of things that could go through your mind of, you know, did I just psych myself up to see something? And, you know, did it just, you know, did I see something because I wanted to see something, you know, almost like children sometimes can do that. I remember doing that, watching Thriller too many times as a child. And then I swear to God, Michael Jackson was standing in front of my bedroom before we knew he was touching kids. This is, you know, it was more so the zombie part that was scaring me, not the other part. Retrospectively, it's even scarier. But in my mind, I that's what I had seen. It wasn't really there. It wasn't a ghost, but my mind conjured that up. And our minds are certainly capable of doing that stuff. So, right. But having another person right next to you, though, that saw that, did that bring some comfort or confirmation that you're not crazy?
It was the perfect storm. Not necessarily. With me, I'm an overthinker, right? I need more than just these other people that could potentially be crazy too.
Sure.
The psychic feeler was the first one who acknowledged it. When I looked over, because he said, Aaron, there's something in front of me. I looked over and I saw a giant, like a shadow or black mass in front of him. I thought it was Heather with him. So then all of a sudden I heard Heather cracking some leaves behind me as she steps. So I'm like, crap, well, what am I seeing? So I'm actively looking. Mind you, I have no idea what potentially could be here. It was really a rando, just a cool location. Mm-hmm. I remember walking over, looking at the moon, looking at the trees, looking at the stones, and looking at the shadows there. So I was actively trying to debunk, you know, as I was moving forward, like, what the heck's that weird free-floating shadow? Like, was totally thrown off until I saw it. The neat thing was the next day, before I hit the phone number, before I followed through with the call, I'm like, well, let me do some investigative work. So I decided to do some historical research real quick on that day, some folklore research and area research. It was an 1840 cemetery, the oldest post cemetery on the island that I was at. And supposedly in the 1840s, a father and son both passed away. They died in a boating accident. It was a crash. Killed them both on impact or whatever the case may be. But they're the ones supposedly guarding or supposed to be watching over the cemetery. Mm-hmm. And I went back in the daytime to the cemetery alone shortly after, you know. And the stone that I witnessed, this apparition, it said, "Here lies father and son." They were the first ones that were buried on the cemetery.
Wow.
Leon. Yeah, perfect storm. I couldn't have asked for a more complex and exciting puzzle to be put together for me. I've never seen anything since or before, honestly. But that moment accelerated me into more the research. So it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose once you have an experience like that, the next thing you want to do is have another experience like that on demand or some way to conjure this up again. But right. Obviously that's not how that works. So you have this experience early on in your investigating, and then obviously that sparks more interest to the path of doing just that, investigating spirits and the paranormal. Right. And you don't have a mentor. You're doing your own thing of just doing the research of, you know, what is out there at the time. Right. You know, many years ago, far less was available to people at that moment. So how do you continue? Where does this path take you in terms of investigating this and trying to figure out what the hell is going on?
Well, I started doing some pretty epic ghosts that had more poltergeist behaviors, and mind you, that's I think just a trigger word. We layer things as much as we can as humans. It's fun to put things in boxes, but poltergeist is German. It means noisy ghost, just a playful spirit by definition, by actual definition. But what it is a spirit that can physically interact with you, and that's really all it is. So any spirit can really turn to a poltergeist upon a little bit of, I don't want to say provocation, but conversation, you know. Mm-hmm. Tasks, missions. So after the fact, like I said, I've started doing a lot of in 2000s. I did a lot of residential homes, but I actually slowed down a lot and went back to the book research and just quick, not self experiments, but experiments contained within my circle that I had a lot more control over. Once the TV show started coming out. So I remember seeing, it was so funny. I remember seeing Ghost Hunters come out, and immediately I'm seeing this magazine that has their cover on it. And I'm either holding the camera like a giant TV camera, cause I was in television production in school, or I was about to go to class or something like that. And I'm thinking, crap, why didn't I think of this? Like, I'm holding the gear. It was all personal. I'm
those
like,
assholes.
Huh. But then I was okay with it.
Yeah.
I was instantly okay. Mind you, I was so fresh. I didn't know how the media and the TV world really worked at the time. And I was like, okay, well, this is good because I just wanted it for myself. Now these guys are going to get out for the rest of the world. Things are going to be good. They're going to figure it out. People are going to see it, and boom. I don't have to work as hard anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's my mindset when seeing this wonderful new thing coming to paranormal TV. And mind you, there are some shows before. I actually did watch and try to learn off of Unsolved Mysteries. I have all the VHS tapes.
I do too.
Still, there's like a a set that they sold at Best Buy years ago.
Yeah. All the ghost series and all that.
Oh yeah.
It's on demand now. You can just press the button and it plays and it makes it that much more joyful. I just like to play the intro and scare my children.
They were good ones.
Those are the best paranormal shows ever. That to me, when I reference that show so much on my podcast, because so many of the first concepts I learned about, I learned from Robert Stack walking around the Queen Mary, you know, and it's like, oh, an EVP. Oh, what is that? When they in the bulkhead of the Queen Mary and the foot. There were so many good stories. I could recite some of them.
You know what I should do? I should redo all those episodes, but in the procedures that I do nowadays and go back like. That'd be awesome.
Go back and try and find some of the houses. Yeah. And I've actually
solved mysteries.
I've attempted that with one case, because there was one case that was very close to where I grew up. Do you remember the bunk beds? The haunted bunk bed episode on Unsolved Mysteries?
It's not the one with the monster guy that, like, I mean, there's a brutal one where I remember they called the Operation Beast, and it would literally like throw this woman or said rape this woman.
No, I don't believe it was that. It was from a town in Horicon. I grew up in Wisconsin, and this town was like 20 miles down the road. Yeah. And I was like, oh, this isn't very far from where I live. And the bunk beds they brought into the house, and these kids started having these experiences in their rooms. And then an uncle slept over in the bedroom sounds kind of creepy and fucked up there, but but at the time it was completely normal.
Of course.
And he apparently freaked out and saw something as well. The father saw the garage on fire, ran outside to try and put it out, and it wasn't on fire anymore. His lunchbox goes flying across the living room. It was a big story. And it was one of the creepier ones. So all these years later, 25 years later, I'm doing a podcast and I'm talking about ghosts, and I'm seeing this very interesting trend pop up of bunk beds in ghost stories. And I don't know what the hell it is, but if there's a random object that has had more attachments to ghosts in hearing probably 10,000 ghost stories over the last 6-7 years, it's bunk beds. And I don't know why. And
that's why people want to be on top bunk.
Yeah,
scary on the bunk.
It's totally bizarre. It's like such a random object to be connected with a haunting, and people are connecting it very frequently.
I laugh, but I don't pull any. I had a super active imagination. I really did, and I'm totally open with that. When I was younger, call it a little bit of supernatural infused when I was younger or not. I'm definitely not putting my foot down on paranormal. However, I do recall this very vivid, very accurate, very physical story that my mom could probably, repeat back on her perspective that would match pretty accurately. When I was, lived in a small house growing up, up until age 7, and I was about 5, 6 at this point. Power went out, no power in the house. So lightning storm outside or wherever the case may be. Well, I have always liked adventures. So my first go-to is let's go to the drawer with the flashlights, take the flashlights and go downstairs. Cause downstairs is where I played, but it was still kind of creepy if I think about it. And automatically, and it was like, no windows and it was just like a catacomb, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It was the best place for a flashlight. Trust me. So I went downstairs and with the flashlight and got to the bottom of the steps, shined it on the other side past the bunk bed. Shined it on the other side. And, I saw my shadow and it's dancing. I'm dancing. And then I realized the flashlight's in front of me. I'm not dancing. That's not my shadow. About that time, I realized that, like, I'm not sure if it sensed something, but it did this very dramatic stop, kind of a stiff-bodied thing, and just bolted to its left, out of the view of my flashlight. I tripped all the way upstairs, dropping the flashlight. Batteries probably went out everywhere, and I, tripped probably on every step going upstairs. It was terrifying.
It's bizarre the amount of things that are connected with a bunk bed in the story. What I was getting to with the Unsolved Mysteries is I've tried to retrace that one. I mean, keep in mind, these were all filmed in like 85. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's like half the people are dead that were, you know, the adults in the video giving the accounts. I couldn't find anything about it, but I did find a lot of people who remembered that story. The closest I've ever come to anything being traced to a bunk bed, because I've been asking, well, what model was your bunk bed back in 89? You know, like anyone's going to know this, but just trying to see if there's any consistency. Were they wood? Were they metal? What did they look? You know, if there's anything that we can put together on this. And we did have one story of someone taking the lumber of the bunk bed and finding pentagrams being written on it. And it really? Was a fairly legit caller. It didn't sound like I'm just gonna fuck with you because this is a great story to fuck with. And it really was like, this is interesting. And I suppose, you know, you could have some, I don't know where these things were made. Maybe somebody in some factory did something literally with the lumber. Maybe there was something to that. I don't know. I do know that the story in the Horicon bunk bed story was they got rid of the bunk beds, they destroyed it, they took it to a dump, and their problems were solved. Nothing else happened. So they really did connect it to that bunk bed. But it's just a very bizarre object or piece of furniture that seems to hold things. It's not grandma's hope chest, it's the bunk bed. You got a Big Sur water beds. You know, it's like, how did this happen? Very strange. Anyhow, yes, that's our tangent on Unsolved Mysteries and how it's shaped our lives. So going back to your stories and as you continued to figure out ways to investigate, there's all sorts of tools and things that people obviously use for investigating, and those have evolved over the years. I'm not a big tech guy. I don't really investigate. I just kind of moderate those programs and let people share their stories.
That's a lot of work, all right?
Yeah. I'd rather just hear them from afar than actually be there. Obviously, there's been evolutions of equipment over the years. Some will stick back to, well, you know, just your own intuition using a regular old tape recorder. That's all you need. Some will have God knows what. They've disassembled their Xbox and then they've, you know, they somehow have integrated a Nintendo Switch to it. But they're also just using that to play Mario while they're investigating.
I'm ready for them to do Craig off of Ninja Turtles, that robot body with the brain inside the belly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm ready for that tool where someone just implants their brain in there. Like, let's find ghosts.
And somehow, actually, somebody will use the old toy from 1989 from Kenner and somehow integrate that into a ghost hunting tool. There's all these different methods that exist now that people swear by. And I know this is an area that you've really dived into as far as the science behind what people are seeing, how they're seeing it, what we're using, what we're not using. Talk about that. Talk about what people have traditionally been using, what the successes have been, haven't been, and where do you think that should be going?
Well, honestly, we're using all the wrong devices. We have been for years. And there has been a lot of new devices introduced, but a lot of them are the same concepts as others. I mean, it's just tomato. Sometimes we're slapping this coat of paint on this, but really it's the same concept. If you think about the ITC realm, which is the instrumental transcommunication, that's the idea to communicate through the frequencies via visual, static within a TV is a quick example, or the audio, which is more popular, and I think got popularized through the Frank box, but there's boxes before Frank's box. He just made it more digestible and easier to, I don't want to say market, but, you know, to get out there.
Mm-hmm.
Because before it was more of a manual switch it would do. So Frank made it a little bit easier for us.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think of the SB711, I know they're trying with different frequencies, but everyone's trying with different frequencies and different sounds and so forth. And even some people put frequency hertz down to, I think, quote me if I'm wrong, or like 426 is like Earth's frequency or something like that. Some people try matching audio files with that. which I'm very, very commendable. And I'm glad people are out there trying to do that. But I think they're not looking, we, you know, as a whole are not looking at the big picture. So if we step back on all the devices, all the tools that we use, we're digging into radiation at the end of the day. We're in the alpha zone. So there's alpha, beta, gamma. You know, gamma's atom bombs, lasers, all that fun stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, beta is more the bad chemical stuff, even going to the microwaves a little bit there. But the alpha zone is your frequencies, your short waves and whatnot. That's where we're at. And that's quantum. You know, I have my twists and turns with quantum now, too, as my research has developed. But traditionally known to quantum physics, which is calculable, which is awesome. But we are in a very uncalculable zone. I don't want to say can't reproduce, because there is a way to reproduce. And we've been able to do that, which is pretty fantastic. But it's hard. It's difficult. There's a lot more layers than just having the device there. It's almost an extension of your well-being. It's what rapport have you built with the energy around? You know, what do you know about it? Mm-hmm. And we are more in the quantum mechanics or quantum theory. And I think people like that a little more than they should. I hate it. I hate it. I want to calculate this, you know. I want to reproduce snapping of the finger type stuff. But people, if it's in a theory-based, hey, everyone can have their own theory and everyone can be happy. If you're in this field trying to do it right, you're not going to make everyone happy. That's just the end of it. If you're making everyone happy, doing something wrong, got to check yourself. Me, I piss people off daily. I get the emails to prove. But again, I'm in it for the science. Mm-hmm. So when I say SB7, I know sometimes I'm talking and some of your audience may be like, SB what? Sure. Spirit box. When I say spirit box, I just basically mean broken radio, twists and turns through frequencies. Myself and my co-researcher, Nick, we like to run those boxes or that box at 100 milliseconds. It's 1/10 of a second, so super fast. And we like to get instant responses, not responses, you know, seconds later. We're talking right away. We recognize those being more valid than a response that comes, you know, 5 seconds later or beyond. And we want multiple syllables. We don't want to do a simple yes or no, because there's something called pareidolia. The most popular example of pareidolia is the man and the moon. Everyone probably recognizes that. You look in the moon, you see an image of a man. People see faces commonly. We look in clouds, it's easy to see. We look at toast, we see Jesus. So it's easy to look at a picture, look at an image or hear something and just go to something that you want to hear or recognize as a good possibility, and that's what you lean towards. Mm-hmm. So hard to check yourself in this field. I'll get to it later, but recently I had a hard check on myself. Like it's kind of weird. I was in tears. It was such a data kind of discovery point to me that took me in a position that it still went with my research, but it wasn't what I thought it was. And it was just a shock. And I had to keep telling myself, I go, it's not my emotions, not my feelings, not, you know, I'm doing this data. If the data takes me this way, I got to go this way, Aaron. So, I'm okay with it now. I'm okay with it. It was a hard pill to swallow. And I'm going to challenge it in 2020, this whole year. Maybe it sticks, maybe it doesn't, but it seems the most valid way to explain the activity and what ghosts and spirits are. It's just eye-opening.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Aaron G. Thompson. You don't want to miss the second half. We're going to get into this even deeper. And quite honestly, this is one of those shows where I can honestly say, I never thought of that before. And it kind of blows your mind and adds a whole other layer the things we talk about every single week. We'll talk about how does the concept of our energy splitting between memory and consciousness at death work. We'll talk about it in as easy to digest bites as possible. Is our conscious memory still a part of our energy after we die? And did Aaron find compelling evidence for reincarnation? We'll talk about all this from a scientific standpoint. Very, very interesting interview. Please do subscribe on our website at thegravetalks.com to become a gravekeeper. That's how you get part two of this interview, as well as part two of all of our interviews. Go to thegravetalks.com, click become a gravekeeper, or directly through Patreon, patreon.com/thegravetalks. Be sure to check out Aaron's work at ghostcrier.com. That's ghostcrier.com. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.